Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We are now officially in the final hour. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, over in Brussels, the negotiators from Downing Street are hammering out the deal with the EU to leave by October the 31st. The crucial question is, will it be ready by tonight? Predictably, the midnight deadline set by Michel Barnier came and went last night, but both sides say they are now inches away from agreeing to a document in principle that can be presented to the European Council tomorrow. Of course, the trouble is, nobody really knows what's in it, so nobody really knows if it's going to get through the Houses of Parliament. Just to help things along, there's a bunch of Remainers on the Eurostar heading to the land of mayonnaise and mussels. Dominic Grieve, Vince Cable and David Lammy are using their expenses to travel first class in order to convince the Eurocrats that we don't really want to leave. Even Caroline Lucas has torn herself away from the Extinction Rebellion protest to join up with them. What an absolute shower they are. We'll keep you updated every step of the way. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll be joined by Raqib Hassan from the Henry Jackson Society to talk about ISIS jihadis being brought back to the UK, and we'll be finding out why so many of us are now turning our backs on lavish displays of wealth and sexy outfits. Plus, I'll be asking what's up with Lewis Hamilton, who's apparently now decided to save the world after polluting the hell out of it for the best part of the last 10 years. 0344 499 1000. And we're joined by LaDonna Harvey in California a little bit later on as well. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Remember me as a sunny day that you once had.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Patricia's got a message for Lewis Hamilton. Yes, I will give up most things that give me joy so you can drive round and round in circles in 4 miles per gallon car and a stack of rubber tyres to boot. Sure, Lewis. Here's one from Chris who says, my prediction, Boris's deal won't be much different to May's deal because the EU wouldn't agree it. Macron won't agree to give up French fishermen's access to our waters. Well, we shall see. We'll keep you updated on that as and when we have something for you from Brussels. Let's talk now, though, to Colonel Richard Kemp. Who is, of course, a former army officer and a man who has served in very many dangerous and very sort of far-flung places. Richard, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. The reason we're talking to you this morning is because there's been a slight change to Remembrance Day and the poppies. Basically, they will not only now pay tribute to fallen British and Allied armed forces, but will be inclusive of that ghastly phrase, all modern Britain. Now, I'm not that bothered by this at all, but the more I think about it and the more I think about guys like yourself who have fought in military action, the less I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think that the poppy, from its inception, the poppy appeal and our remembrance ceremonies have always been intended to commemorate primarily soldiers, sailors and airmen from Great Britain and our former empire and Commonwealth who have fallen in war. And I think I don't have a real problem with extending it to, for example, British civilians that were killed during wars and indeed during terrorist attacks. But I am slightly concerned that there is potentially a dilution and that this could be a slippery slope to remembering all victims of wars, which, of course, is something we should not be doing because it includes people who have been our enemies and people who have carried out mass murder, rape and torture, such as the Nazis and the Islamic State and various others throughout history.
Yeah, and we have this kind of debate, do we not, every year, more or less, when we come up to November the 1st and we come up to Armistice Day as well, because basically poppies start getting sold and the usual suspects come out and say they want a white poppy to represent everyone that died. And I'm with you. I mean, you know, it's not inhumane to say we don't wish to commemorate our enemies' deaths.
No, we should not commemorate our enemies, particularly those who have behaved in such bestial ways as many of our enemies have behaved. One thing I would comment on, which your listeners may or may not be aware of, is that when we have the 2 minute silence on Remembrance Sunday or Armistice Day, the first minute is intended to commemorate those killed in war, British and Commonwealth soldiers. Sailors and airmen. And the second 2 minutes is to commemorate their immediate family, their wives and their children. And so Remembrance already, really, despite the British Legion's previous definition, has already included many who suffered as a result of war. And it's something, you know, I think it's in many ways it's a personal reaction, really, to Remembrance, to who you remember. I mean, I have relatives who were killed in war who weren't fighting in the forces, and of course, I also do remember them on Remembrance Sunday. But many, many people, for example, the merchant sailors have a specific Remembrance Day for themselves. Animals killed in war, for example, have a Remembrance Day. And so I think as we discussed before, I don't really have a massive problem with it, but I do worry that it's descending into a sort of something that it was never intended to be, and many of us will be uncomfortable with.
Well, that is the trouble now, though, isn't it? Because you're quite right. Surely it should be a ceremony where you can stand at the cenotaph or you can stand in your living room and you can remember who it is that you want to remember. It doesn't have to be kind of prescribed by officialdom that you must remember these people, which is the trouble with our society now, I think. We're always being told this is what you have to do and this is how you have to do it.
Yeah, that's right. And one concern you have, and it made me ill-founded, is that I've already heard since the British Legion's announcement of this, which was done very quietly, actually, for reasons that they probably best understand. But I've noted several people commenting that they won't take part in it, won't buy a poppy again, because they don't like this sort of dilution of strictly military remembrance. And I can understand why that is, but
that's a bit of an overreaction as well. I mean, we sort of live in this bizarre world now where everybody's overreacting to everything all the time.
Yeah, I agree. And, it's like the white poppy that you mentioned before, the Peace Pledge Union, which markets this white poppy not as the red poppy, which is to raise funds for wounded soldiers and their families and the families of soldiers killed in battle, etc. Theirs is purely to raise money for their own propaganda operation, which is all about diluting any principles and effectively saying that everybody is equal, everybody is right, whichever side they're fighting on. And I violently disagree with their attempts to hijack it. But at the same time, if people want to wear a white poppy, then let them wear
a white poppy. I mean, we don't want to start banning things just because we don't agree with them, you know?
I agree. And
perversely, that's what a lot of people died for.
Well, that's right. Absolutely, it is. They died for freedom. They died to keep our country clear of people who want to dictate to us.
Yeah.
So of course, we should respect and honour that, and people can have whatever view they want. But I think, the poppy has a particular meaning, and I do dislike those who want to try and hijack it for their own sort of left-wing motive. And it's always a left-wing motive, whatever your politics are, that's where it comes from.
Oh yeah, they're the ones that always want to ban everything, I'm afraid, and tell us how we should behave and tell us how we should be speaking and tell us how we should be addressing one another and all of that. And they wish to revamp the British and English language so that there are no words in it that might offend them. I mean, it really is quite remarkable. Just while I've got you on, Colonel, tell us what you make of the state of the Veterans Bill at the moment, because we've been talking about that for the last couple of days. It was thought it might be in the Queen's speech. It wasn't in the Queen's speech. Governments say they're still working on it. What's your view?
Well, I'm slightly sceptical about the you know, the government's approach towards veterans and indeed to serving soldiers, because one, looking after them properly takes a lot of money, and that's money that should be spent, of course. But when the government is short of money, the first place it looks is the armed forces in every aspect of it, because it doesn't consider that to be a vote winner. So I'm doubtful whether there's the funds available to really make things different, and also the political resolve, because there is so much effort going in now to other matters, particularly Brexit, that I'm not sure there is the resolve to support our troops. And it's not just their welfare, it's not just their health, it's also keeping them away from the vexatious prosecutions we've seen, which have been used to attack British soldiers and veterans from Afghanistan, Iraq and Northern Ireland. And I think that, you know, these are areas that do require great political will. I'm pleased to see that today, I think it was announced that Colonel David Richmond, retired commanding officer of an infantry battalion who was the most senior officer to be wounded in action, has been appointed as head of the UK government, the new government office for veterans affairs. So I think that's quite encouraging news, because of course he's a man who really understands the problems that troops face. But without that military commitment, the political will, and without the finances, then even he wouldn't be able to do a huge amount.
No, of course. Colonel Richard Kemp, thank you very much, as ever, for talking to us about not only the Veterans Bill, but also about the poppy and how it is now going to be used to commemorate not just those who died in military action, but also those who have become victims of terrorist atrocities as well.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Honestly, I just feel like giving up on everything. Shut down completely. Why bother when the world is such a mess and people don't seem to care? I'm going to take a moment away to gather my thoughts. Thank you to those of you who do give a damn about the world. That wasn't really me, by the way. Don't worry, I'm not actually going to give up on anything at all. That was what Lewis Hamilton just said, because apparently he's worried about the future. He's worried about the planet. He's so worried about it that he sold his plane, his £25 million plane that he used to fly his bulldog around in from Los Angeles to Europe. He's worried because he thinks that not enough is being done to save the environment. This is a bloke, by the way, who drives around in a Formula One car that does about 4 miles to the gallon, burns rubber like you wouldn't believe, and the whole Formula One escapade, actually, probably has a carbon footprint of Mars, the way they fly around pantechnicons full of stuff. And they play in places like Sydney, Melbourne. They go to Japan, where they were most recently. They have a Grand Prix in America, in Brazil. They have one sometimes in Argentina. They have them in South Africa. I mean, all over the world these people go. Quite remarkable, isn't it? We're going to talk about that in a second. First, though, here's Ricky. He wants to talk about Remembrance Sunday. Ricky, very good morning to you.
Hello, good morning. Good morning.
Yeah.
The subject of commemoration with the poppy.
Yeah.
In all fairness, that is open to those who feel they want to do something.
Yes.
I mean, my story, and this is all facts, by the way, Mike, you know, my story basically is, I didn't want to have luck story enough, but my father fell in Normandy,
right,
like many other young men, right? And I happen to be, and I am, the only professional public dance hall scene promoter in the UK, Europe, or the States.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact.
Right.
Now then, in the 50th anniversary of Normandy landings, I found myself in the position of that. Sophie Clue, a German girl who was assassinated by Hitler, was a girl who never managed to get to a dance hall because Hitler closed them down.
Right.
But obviously my mother would be about the same age, she did get to go to dance halls. So that's probably why I'm here.
Yes.
But to get to the punchline, and what I did, because I had the power to do so and the knowledge to do so, I promoted a dance to commemorate the women who gave comfort and counsel to the sons and daughters of the fallen British, Allied and German soldiers and American soldiers mm-hmm. of Normandy.
Right.
And in doing so, I found that all the nations that took part, without me realising it, they all sent to me for to decorate the hall. I was doing the event and using a Glenn Miller band. They all sent me their national flags, huge things, beautiful things. You know, I was quite taken aback, as I am at the moment, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I'm making is, obviously, the sons and daughters of the falling had to be catered for, and the women did that, and they did it well by us. So to cater outside the poppy is possible. So I think that's just about as far as I think it should go.
What, so just the people who actually fought in wars? OK, I think I got your point there, Ricky. Thank you very much for making it. Let's talk now, though, to our favourite PR guru, Mr Mark Bukowski, because I want to know what he thinks about Lewis Hamilton's outburst and his brand damage that has been done. There's an awful lot of people, Mark, and a very good morning to you, an awful lot of people on social media have been saying things like, we really like Lewis Hamilton, but this is out of order and he's made a bit of a mistake. What do you reckon, Mark?
I think that it's a struggle for celebrities, sports people who want to sort of recondition themselves in terms of how they engage with this debate. So I think Extinction Rebellion in some ways doesn't need any celebrities. The negative publicity that is generated around the celebrities getting involved you know, is harming those celebrities, admittedly, because real people of all ages, we don't see so many of what I call the Daily Mail calls them the swampies being involved. This is a real people of all ages, 88-year-old people doing what they're doing because they feel this. So there's a crisis here that where celebrities look at these huge media events, and you have to say the Extinction Rebellion is on everybody's lips, both positively and negatively at the moment. They think, well, we've got to dive in and say something. Our brand has to relate to this. I'm travelling all over the world. I'm involved with generating a huge carbon footprint, all this sort of thing. And it's nonsense because they haven't thought it through.
Right.
They haven't thought what their purpose is with the debate. They lend their voice to this. And, of course, everybody says, what? You don't have permission to be involved. Think about yourself. It's sort of slightly ironic that someone involved with, you know, motor racing, travelling all over the world, his carbon footprint is huge, and he's diving into this debate. It's not appropriate. And
it
people
really
don't
isn't.
Need him.
No,
don't need him.
It's a very good point, actually, because almost everyone who's been involved in it has had a lot of flack about it. Like Emma Thompson, when she came to London the other week, the other month, when Benedict Cumberbatch got involved, you know, people were finding all sorts of adverts that he'd done in China for cars, which were not in any way electric cars, but just regular cars, most of them quite gas guzzling cars. And so you're absolutely right, because most people, particularly very wealthy people, can give up whatever they want. They can say, oh, I'm not going to, you know, eat meat anymore, or I'm not going to drive around in my Lamborghini anymore. But it doesn't really mean anything to anyone, does it?
No, it doesn't. And I think what's interesting is that many of, you know, I always say that the Greta Thunberg speech, which was quite inspiring to a younger generation, that same speech was made 30 years ago in Brazil by a 14-year-old Canadian girl. And what did that promote?
Yeah.
It promoted the biggest surge for PR lobbying companies to earn millions by the oil and fossil fuel companies to sort of quash their message.
Yes. Well, I mean, the other problem with an awful lot of this Greta Thunberg stuff is that it's all lies. You know, it is complete and utter nonsense. And the idea that people are falling for it and buying it and repeating it, and the fact that Sky News keeps putting this woman on, who I can't remember her name, but she's one of the founders of Extinction Rebellion, talking about how billions of people are going to die in the next 10 years. It's just rubbish.
So there's a clear debate going on here, and there's, you know, we can fight facts with facts, but, you know, clearly something has tipped people into thinking and talking about this, and that has to be positive, because many of the, you know, it's a generation coming through.
Well, no, but you have to be a bit
careful.
You've
got to inherit something, so we've got to... So therefore, I think that, you know, we are talking about it, which is positive, and there is going to be some heated debate about it. But going back to your point about celebrities, I don't think celebrities are going to do any good for themselves because they haven't thought through why they should be involved and what they stand for in this. It's just sometimes we need an extra burst of publicity. Let's have X celebrities a step forward. That's going to do it. Well, that's running out of gas now, yeah. Not just within the environment, but right across it. But people are thinking, where are the real people here? What do they feel about it? And, of course, social media allows people to turbocharge their argument in a way that you haven't ever been done before in the old days of the old media. Mm.
Yeah, well, Lewis Hamilton's selling his plane with the best will in the world. Well, he's still got a fleet of cars, including two or three Bugattis.
You're going to buy it, Mike.
Well, not quite yet, no. And a giant boat that sits somewhere off the coast of Monaco.
Well, yeah, you know, it's pointless. That's right, because I think that, you know, there's a new people saying, you know, what is the point of all this? Really, what is the point of having 35 properties all over the world? You know, and what good can I do? But has he thought through what is going to happen when he sells his boat and his jet and whatever? What is he actually going to do? That's the question.
Well, I mean, maybe he'll move back to Britain. You never know.
Well, you know what the old curse is, Mike? Don't be famous and don't be rich. If God wants to curse you, makes you famous and rich. So we're okay, Mike.
Well, funnily enough, later on in the show, we're going to be doing this story about John Lewis, who apparently come out and said, oh, you know what? The new thing is not to have any conspicuous displays of wealth. You must be much more kind of sort of calm and much more understated in what you wear and what you do. I can't say I've noticed that that's the case, but I dare say pretty soon we'll see people like Stephen Fry walking around in a hair shirt.
Well, that's interesting. I think he people like humble people this age. I think, you know, we want somebody who's understated. The days of sort of bling and brash, you know, are sort of gone. I think there's a seismic change happening across celebrity culture at the moment, and a lot of people are a lot more thoughtful about it and can offer their opinion. I thought the amusing thing is, you know, Piers Morgan deciding to run a poll about whether or not he should keep his job at GMB. Not a good idea.
Well, luckily for him, he managed to win that one, but I wouldn't be going for that again if I was him.
At a stretch. Yeah. It's quite funny.
I think he probably voted 28,000 times for himself, I would imagine, knowing him as we do. But, I mean, I suppose if you don't tell the Kardashians about this no more conspicuous display of wealth, I'll have to tell them.
I think it's fashion, isn't it? And yeah. I think that is going out of fashion. It truly is, Mike. I really do believe that.
Oh, no, I think you're right. Absolutely right. Mark, thanks very much indeed. Mark Bukowski there, a PR guru to the stars. Basically, as he says, don't get rich, don't get famous, because you get slaughtered. This is Talk Radio.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
More blasted rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Matthew Wright coming up at 1 o'clock, of course, taking you all the way through until 4 o'clock this afternoon. I'm delighted to say now, though, we're going to take a slight detour away from all the doom and gloom of what we were just talking about there in northern Syria, the doom and gloom about Brexit and the unhappiness factor. And instead, we're going to celebrate good food, good restaurants, and pretty nice places, actually, all together, with Simon Numford, who's Managing Director of AA Media. Simon, very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
No, I'm very well indeed, but I'm slightly disappointed, I have to say, because the list of the sort of top 10 restaurants that I saw in a piece that you've got in your new guide, I've only been to one of them. It's not good enough.
Oh, you need to get out more.
I do. I do. Funnily enough, the one I have been to is the Three Chimneys in Skye, which is about the furthest one away from where I live.
Well, you've done really well to get that far, but I'm sure you agree, it's well worth the journey.
Oh, it's fantastic. One of the greatest meals I think I've ever had in my life there. It was absolutely amazing. And beautiful setting as well. But all I would say to anyone who's going to go there is make a night of it. Don't sort of think about going there and coming back again, because it's quite a long way away.
Oh, gosh, yes. It's definitely an overnight journey.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely right. So this is the new AA guide. You've got 2,000 restaurants basically inspected for culinary excellence. A lot of new additions to the guide, I think.
Yeah, we've got about 140 new restaurants this year. This is our 27th edition of the AA Restaurant Guide, which started off in 1992. It's a really good blend of obviously existing, well-established restaurants that we know cook really good food and are firm favourites, combined with obviously lots of new restaurants. And as I'm sure you can appreciate, and your listeners will appreciate, that, you know, there's constantly new restaurants coming into the marketplace.
Sure.
And a constantly evolving scene.
One of the things I was going to say I've noticed is that, you know, we always used to be told, certainly when I was kind of beginning my gourmand journey, I should say,
right,
never eat in a hotel. But there's an awful lot of really good restaurants now in hotels. And funnily enough, Kerridge's Bar and Grill in the Carinthia in London, I've actually been to the bar. I haven't eaten there, but I've seen what they do. And what it's amazing, they've got these kind of what can only be described as vertical barbecues, which I'm sure you know, where they roast the meats and the steaks, but they also roast aubergines. It looks incredible.
Yeah, it is, and that's a big feature of some of Tom's cooking there, and he's replicated that from The Coach, which is his second restaurant in Marlow, which, again, is another great restaurant for those that might have been to the Hand and Flowers, but not his second restaurant, which is The Coach, which you can't book for. You just have to be the first to turn up, because they don't take bookings. So,
right.
Yeah.
But you've also got the Gravetye Manor Hotel in East Grinstead. You've got the restaurant in the Ritz as well. Is it definitely now a thing that hotels have worked out that actually they can do quite well, marginally speaking, in terms of their profits, by having a quite an expensive restaurant on the premises?
Yeah, often you'll find a more of a fine dining restaurant in a hotel, or you might find two restaurants of diverse angles, one which might be much more informal. But definitely, you know, food in hotels has got dramatically better over the decades, and you're seeing some really, really good restaurants in hotels now.
Yeah, and what about the one inside Tate Britain? Because that makes it as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's a really interesting restaurant, new on our guide this year, and Great, good food, and also a great wine list there. Really well curated wine list for anybody that really enjoys their wine with their food as well, which is an important ingredient, obviously, the makeup of the restaurant.
Certainly is. How important is the wine list for you guys to sort of look at in terms of how reasonable it is, or just how I don't know how varied it is, I suppose.
We do look at the wine list. We have a separate AA Wine Award, which recognises the best list in the country each year, from that point of view. But it doesn't come into the actual assessment of the rosette that we give in terms of the food award. But we do look at the wine list in terms of their, you know, accessibility, their pricing, given where they might be, and how they might help educate diners to choose an appropriate wine.
Right. And do people get upset if they fall out of your guide? I mean, I can't imagine that you would want to name anyone that has, but I presume people do fall out of it from time to time.
Of course they get upset, because it's the nature of food. It's a very, very passionate and emotional subject, food. And obviously, if you speak to any chef, you know, they want to achieve the best standard, you know, and their teams are very passionate. So yes, but I think, you know, it's always a good sign if a chef or a restaurateur is disappointed that they haven't achieved what they wanted, because it means something to them in terms of that recognition.
Right. One surprising one for me was the Chapter One restaurant in Bromley, which is a god awful place. I'm amazed they've got a decent restaurant.
Oh no, that's been a fantastic restaurant under Andrew McKeish for many, many years, actually.
Has it? So worth a visit then, even if you have to go through Bromley to get to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
I'd recommend that.
Okay. What about, have you got a sort of best restaurant? Is that too difficult to nominate?
Oh, gosh, yes, Mike. There's so many, but I mean...
Or have you got a personal favourite, maybe? I suppose maybe you can't show sort of bias.
Yeah, well, we're blessed with so many great restaurants in the UK now, but I think if you look at our current A restaurants of the year, so you've got Cornerstone, which is Tom Brown out in Hackney Wick, which he's doing some fantastic food in an up-and-coming area, uncomplicated food, big punchy flavours, with a real focus on sustainable and fish,
yes,
which is great. And then you've got Fordwich Arms, which is our restaurant of the year for England, refined British food, seasonal menus, best that Kent has got to offer in Britain's smallest town.
Amazing. And my favourite, I think, in terms of quirkiness, yep, is the World War II, the former World War II spy training facility in, I think it's Arisaig. Is that right, Arisaig House?
Arisaig House, yes, that's right.
Sounds Scottish. I think,
yes, it is. And I think it's really interesting that you get all of these very unusual places that develop into either a hotel or a foodery or et cetera. So, and we've got loads of examples in the guide this year where they're in a beautiful setting, or, you know, they're in an unusual location. And as you mentioned before, like the Three Chimneys, but, you know, they're very, very well established in terms of delivering that.
And is there also, finally, a kind of a move towards more vegetarian food, more vegan food in a lot of these places as well?
Yes, absolutely. I think the key thing we've seen, Mike, is, you know, dietary requirements have become mainstream. So things like vegetarianism or gluten-free or dairy-free,
yeah,
have become mainstream. From that point of view, and we are seeing a recognition that, you know, plant-based dishes, etc., are becoming far more in vogue.
Okay, well, good news for Lewis Hamilton, I suppose. Thank you very much indeed, Simon Numford, Managing Director of AA Media. There's so many restaurants that are out there that I haven't been to. I could be quite busy. There's 27 new restaurants in London alone. There's 9 new restaurants in Devon. Norfolk's got 6. Worcestershire's got 6. Cornwall's got 6. North Yorkshire's got 7. Apparently the place with the best view is somewhere called Mizu in Borrowdale. I'm not sure where that is. I'm assuming it might be in the Lake District, but there's so many restaurants I have to get to. So little time.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Independent Republic of Mike Graham, you know what to do. 0344 499 1000. A lot of people seem to be upset by me slagging off Bromley. I've only done it because Con, the producer of this show, is from Bromley. He's just tweeted here. He says, what's wrong with Bromley? London's biggest borough. It's not even in London. Home of David Bowie, Charles Darwin and Enid Blyton, all three of whom are dead. David Bowie moved to New York to get away from Bromley. Charles Darwin went round the world to get away from Bromley. And Enid Blyton went to Dorset and went mad. So actually, Bromley is the home of nobody that you could name who is alive and well and sensible. Thanks very much indeed. Let's talk to Paul, who's in Stotfold. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, sir. What do you want to tell me?
Well, I just wanted to say I'm a week late, but last week they handed out the Nobel Peace Prize to...
They did?
They gave it to the Ethiopian president, with our friend Greta getting second prize.
Yeah, well, second prize in the Nobel Peace Prize is not really worth having, is it?
Well, I just thought that they should really have awarded it to the Leavers and Brexiteers, because that's over 3 years now, Mike, and we've been very patient. We've shown a lot of restraint and good manners,
yes,
now. It's really pushing our limits now, this lot, trooping over to Brussels today. I think that if they awarded us the money, I think we should be magnanimous, and we should then teach the Ramonas that when we leave, there will be a life outside of the EU. And we can teach them that from day one, we're all ready to invest, and we can invest in this country and deal with Europe and deal with the rest of the world. We're all ready to invest in this country and the rest of the world, and there will be a life. The lights,
yes,
will come on, the sun will come out, Mike, and they'll be okay.
Well, do you know what? I'm actually starting to get a bit worried about people like David Lammy and Caroline Lucas and Dominic Grieve, who've all had to go.
No. Look,
can you imagine having to sit next to any of them on a long train journey to Brussels?
No, Mike, you can help some people. There are some people that are beyond assistance, I'm afraid. there are cases that are beyond, you know, the doctor will have to make a case to them, but I can't help something.
But this is it. What are they going to do? They're going to be so upset. They're going to be so miserable. They're not going to want to get out of bed in the morning.
Well, they're professionals, aren't they? They are professionals. And my friend Grieve, and remember, I live where I'm in Stockfold. I live in Alistair Burt territory.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, so I am also, I've got my problems out here as well, but I'm fighting a case against dear Alistair. You know, he's betwixt and between Alistair. He can't make his mind up either. He hasn't got the Tory whip at the moment. So I've got my problems out here. I can't help you all in London as well.
I appreciate that, Paul. But listen, the sentiment is the most important thing. And I think you'll have cheered an awful lot of people up by your magnanimity and generosity. Thank you very much indeed. Let's talk to Craig, who's in Oxford. Hello, Craig.
Morning, Mike.
Morning. How are you doing?
Brilliant. Rejoice. Climate change finally has the global ambassador it so greatly deserves.
Who's that?
Lewis Hamilton has finally spoken. He's tweeted from his iPhone on his private jet, flying back from Japan, where he's just spent a weekend driving his high-performance petrol car with no catalytic converter, round in circles for days, burning eight sets of tyres, hundreds of kilograms of fuel, all the way while he's travelling back to his tax haven apartment in Monaco.
Yeah, very close to his...
nothing.
Very close to his economy. Yacht.
Yeah, where he contributes nothing to the economy in the UK or any of its efforts to cut carbon emissions or clean energy. So,
do you know all I could think of when I saw the story last night? Do you remember that footage of him where he got fined in Australia? I think it was in Melbourne. And he had one of those like supercars, but it was out, it was before the race, and he was in one of these Mercedes supercars, and he was doing donuts in it, round and round and round, burning as much rubber as you could possibly burn, with loads of smoke coming off the car, and he was kind of showing off, basically doing figure eights and you know, spinning the car round and round and round and spinning the wheels, and it was quite an impressive sight actually. But what it wasn't was in any way not polluting.
Well, no, what it was is they tried to prosecute him for dangerous driving or not being in control of a motor vehicle, and he argued that he was a Formula One world champion and he was in perfect control.
Which is fair enough, but don't tell me it's green.
Well, it's not, is it? And
no.
As I say, it's complete hypocritical nonsense from yet another one of these rich A-listers like Emma Thompson.
Yeah. I think Mark Bukowski had it right when he said to us, actually, the celebrity should stay away from this because all it does is actually diminish the cause because they're all hypocrites. And in fact, somebody sent me a piece earlier from Jude Law, who actually has admitted that he's a hypocrite when he goes on these marches and when he kind of demands that everybody should be more green. And Adam Clayton from U2 as well, you know, who have one of the biggest carbon footprints in the world when they travel around with their rock and roll show.
Yeah, the only time they really need to get involved is when we get children in need, when we get the endless procession of millionaires telling the poor people to donate money to good causes.
Yes, I really enjoy it when they do that. That's great. Craig, thank you. Very good call indeed. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Let's talk to Johnny, who's in Belfast. Hello, Johnny.
What about you, mate?
Hey, Kieper. Yeah, very good, mate. What can I do for you?
You know, I was going to talk about Brexit and Northern Ireland, but then about who's that hero who drives the F1 car?
Oh, Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Well, as soon as I heard about him, I was online, eBay, looking for effigies.
Yeah, well, I mean, unbelievable, isn't it? The guy comes out with this stuff. Surely he must have thought about what he was saying before he said it. I mean, because he didn't even make any point about how much he regretted burning all the fossil fuels that he burns.
Oh, no, don't be bringing up his past. The man's changed. The man's changed. He saw the light.
Well, he hasn't stopped. He hasn't resigned from driving, as far as I know. Mercedes is still his team. And Petronas, the petrol company, is still, you know, paying him billions and gazillions of pounds to drive at high speed around the world.
Yeah, us working class, we're so proud of him.
Oh,
we're so proud of him.
If only he'd come back to Britain occasionally and say hello.
I know. I could go round in the Pope a bit.
Quite. Well, speaking of that, did you see the other day that some people went to the Vatican to get the Pope's blessing for Brexit?
God.
As if he hasn't got enough on his mind.
To be honest, like, I'm not one who would follow the Pope.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Well, of course. Well, I knew you'd be on one side or the other on that one, Johnny. What do you want to say about Brexit?
It pretty much still is the same here. You know, I was going to say that if you're listeners, now, I can only speak on behalf of myself and my own opinion because we're so divided here still. In Northern Ireland, that don't forget about us, the people who want to leave the EU. And the bigger picture for us is, you know, we don't want to be ruled by bureaucrats or Eurocrats. because they're the ones who are pulling the strings.
And you don't want to be ruled by Leo Varadkar either, do you?
No, we do not. Well, that's one side of the people here. But the nationalists here, which I respect, don't get me wrong, they do want a united Ireland, and the EU would have that. Now, what the nationalists fail to understand is, yes, they may get their united Ireland, but they won't have it for themselves. It won't be like an independent country like they so wish. They'll still be ruled by Brussels, yeah, and there will be a state. And Ireland is no longer neutral.
And what are you hearing? I mean, what did it? Because I know sometimes that we hear from the DUP. They were in a late night meeting again last night. But I imagine that sometimes the conversations that are had in Belfast are different from the ones that are had in London. What are they saying to you guys over there?
Sure. Well, there's just been a tweet. I was trying to get on. I was listening to a radio show this morning.
Yeah.
And Arlene Foster, oh God bless her cotton socks. Like what? She tweeted that she wanted an emergency meeting for everybody to actually go back to work for a day or two.
Right.
To chat about the upcoming Brexit deal. Now, that suggests that something's been said in terms of what's going to happen when we leave. And and they're saying the threat is that we could still be tied in, to not the customs union, but the other thing.
Well, you mean the single market?
No. Yeah. Is it custom union?
Well, what they want to try to do, I mean, what the Dublin politicians will try to do, what Europe will try to do, is to tie Northern Ireland into some kind of deal whereby the changes that would take place as part of being British would only happen once you cross the Irish Sea, so that effectively.
Yeah,
but it's a kind of a nothing conversation about. It doesn't matter.
The backstop was never an issue. Sure, we had Theresa May on video saying it was never an issue.
No. Well, nobody wants to put a border in, right? So why would you?
And the only person responsible for making a hard border would be the European Union. And that's for Northern Ireland and the Good Friday Agreement. The Irish, now I'm talking about Irish-born citizens and Northern Irish-born citizens. We have a unique arrangement where we can freely travel between one another. And that's within the Good Friday Agreement. And we still can retain our British nationality or Irish nationality.
Yeah.
If we so wish.
Sure.
And when we leave, which I hope we do, and I personally speaking, it should be a no-deal Brexit, clean slate, everybody gets on with their business.
Yeah.
And that won't affect the Good Friday Agreement either, because it's strictly between the UK and Ireland.
Exactly.
Even though the EU and America, the Democrats, who we know are crazy, and the traitor Tony Blair, who organised the peace accord. I'm proud to admit that I voted against the Good Friday Agreement because I knew what it was going to cost.
Right.
In terms of who was going to get paid off, terrorist-wise, who was going to get paid off? Now, this is only my opinion. And who was going to get paid off here, there, and ever to stop the violence?
Well, in any political agreement like that, there are winners and there are losers. And the people with the people with the loudest voices do the best out of it, as has Sinn Féin done, as have the nationalists.
And the Sinn Féin, now, as a party, what they're doing, because of the influx since Merkel opened the borders, they are looking after any foreign national. Now, I have nothing against these people, don't get me wrong, but they're using them to get their votes, to try and get their way to stay within the European Union and to fight against any sense of us staying within the UK, obviously.
They're doing the same in Scotland. You know, they're inviting people to come and live in Scotland from Europe, which is fine. They're giving them the vote on whether Scotland should be independent, right, of Britain, but they're not giving that vote to people who are actually from Scotland who don't live there.
The SNP are dangerous. And that woman over there, what's her name again? I keep forgetting it.
Who, Nicola?
Oh, she is mental. She is chicken oriental. There's no. She's so full of happy horses doo-doo, it's unreal.
Yeah.
And the SNP is so dangerous.
Well,
like, independent to be ruled by Europe.
I know. It makes no sense. It doesn't even mean independence. But, Johnny, I've got to let you go. We've got to run. Thank you very much indeed. Lots of different thoughts there from Johnny in Belfast. He wants to leave the European Union, even though we're always told by the Northern Irish parties that Northern Ireland vote to remain, like we're always told that Scotland voted to remain. Well, it didn't. There's a lot of people that voted to leave, and an awful lot of them more than voted for the SNP at the last general election and the last Scottish election even as well.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.